Welcome to Sharp Talk, the regular podcast of eSharp magazine. Go to eSharp.eu for free access to all the podcasts to date. This is Paul Adamson, and I'm in conversation with Mario Monti. Mario Monti is a former Prime Minister of Italy, a two-term European Commissioner for the Internal Market and then Competition Policy, and is now a member of the Italian Senate. Mario, I remember vividly about 6 years ago when you were Prime Minister of Italy, giving a speech in Florence in Palazzo Vecchio, when you proclaimed Europe is back in Italy, Italy is back in Europe. Fast forward 6 years, how would you see the situation now?
Well, Italy, of course, is still in Europe. Europe, luckily enough, is still in Italy. But so many things happened since in Italy and in most European countries concerning the never easy, always fascinating relationship between a member state and the EU that one must periodically re-examine the state of minds and guts occasionally on this relationship. Now, of course, Italy had its general election a few days ago. Europe appeared to be, some 6 months ago, a key divisive topic in the pre-electoral debate, with the five-star movement and the League, formerly the Northern League, but now a party across the country, pleading for some reconsideration of Italy's membership of the euro, if not of the EU. Then, after the Le Pen defeat against Macron, they have calmed down very much. And now these two parties, the Five Star of Luigi Di Maio and the League of Matteo Salvini, have done resoundingly successfully in the elections. So people in Italy and elsewhere have expectations on exactly what you ask, namely how will the EU policy of Italy evolve.
I know you're not here to crystal ball gaze, but do you have any predictions about the most likely outcome, which coalition would be formed? A more centre-left formation headed by the Cinque Stelle movement, or a more centre-right movement with the Lega and Berlusconi's party?
It's very important that you mention here left and right. I believe, like many others, including President Macron, that these categories will gradually fade away from the debate. But thank you for offering me this hook, because I hear so much these days, especially in the UK, in the US, Italy has turned to the far right.
Right.
This is not the case. There isn't any evidence of this. The two winners, as you say, the Five Star movement is difficult to pinpoint and probably has people who lean more rightward and people who lean more leftward, and is certainly not a far-right party, which the League is, but the League got a resounding result for them, but 17 or so percent, and more significantly from the point of view of concerns about an extreme right-oriented Italy. Small parties which tried to play the far-right card, like Casa Pound or Forza Nuova, didn't even get to 1%. So I think this is reassuring. Going back to your question, now it's really a puzzle what sort of coalition there will be. A number of possibilities are there. New elections in a short time. I believe that this will be considered by President Mattarella, the President of the Italian Republic, as really the extreme remedy. There may be a coalition of Five Star and the Democratic Party, which, however, would be quite bitter to swallow for a Democratic Party, which has always considered the Five Star movements their fiercest enemy. Now, Mr. Renzi has finally resigned from head of the Democratic Party. This is likely to open up an internal search for a new soul, and who knows if there will be a five-star orientation in this search for a new soul. I think the most worrying combination from the EU point of view would be a five-star league coalition, which, by the way, would be just about the only one having 50% or very close to 50%.
A grand coalition.
Yes, a grand coalition of the so-called populists, but they have very different histories, recent histories in both cases, and I think very different ways of operating. So I don't believe this is a likely possibility.
Well, when you said earlier that, Kate, I totally accept the idea that one should discard these rather outmoded left and right labels, fine. But one thing that these two groups have in common, Cinque Stelle and Lega, is their alleged, or their very obvious Euroscepticism. They share that. No, they are not particularly pro-European formations, either one or the other. So for the rest of the European Union, it is concerning. There's no ideal scenario for the rest of Europe in terms of how the domestic politics will pan out in Italy.
It is concerning, but it was not black and white before the elections, because we talk of two Eurosceptic populists, Di Maio and Salvini, as if Renzi and Berlusconi weren't. Okay. But to be honest, they are all four populists, with differences though. Salvini and Di Maio are bottom-up populists from the grassroots of the country. Berlusconi is, of course, the father of all populists in Italy, and not only in Italy, and has acquired some mild, slightly nostalgic, somewhat reassuring tones, which have even led the EPP family to consider him a bastion against populism in Italy, which gives also proof of the capacity of adaptation of Mr. Berlusconi and of the rather low threshold of standard that the political families, not only EPP, pose when it comes to trying to maximize votes. And Mr. Renzi had practiced from Palazzo Chigi, from the position of Prime Minister, one day off, one day on, the role of a Eurosceptic, blaming Europe so much. Right. And I think they had differences in shades. So one could deduct, four-fourths of the four key persons have been Eurosceptics, so what will happen? I think that the Italian society still remains largely pro-European, may criticize some policies of the EU,
right,
and rightly so in some cases.
Yeah.
I think that as these new guys come down to business, eventually, of governing Italy, they will immediately realize how dramatic it would be for Italy to position itself outside of the European Union without having the strength of a Germany, say, which would be perhaps the only country which could do without the European Union, even though renouncing to massive benefits.
Well, we can't talk about all the EU policies, some of which are need reforming, and Italy's reaction to them. But on the specific, Mario, of the single currency, Matteo Salvini is on record as saying that the euro is a mistake and that it's a currency doomed to fail. And just recently, the Commission has indicated, yes, that there are excessive economic imbalances in the Italian economy still, alongside Greece, the only two economies singled out in the Eurozone. So there are issues there in terms of, at least question marks, should we say, over Italy's continued membership of the European currency?
No, I don't believe so, not at all. But there is still a huge amount of work to be done by Italian economic policy. You may remember that a few years ago, Italy was the only country of Southern Europe which was able to take itself out of the financial and fiscal crisis within the Eurozone without asking for a single euro of assistance. And therefore, it was the only country in Southern Europe which has come out of that situation without a troika. Already in spring 2013, Italy was out of the excessive deficit procedure. So it has done considerably better in that respect than, say, France or Spain. But in the last 3 or 4 years, I believe, some good reforms have been at least started to be put in place, like the labor market reform. But there has been much too much of a policy of transfers, the bonuses given out by the Renzi government, largely, in my view, because of a shortcoming of EU policy, because the Stability and Growth Pact, in my view, has a shortcoming in that it does not allow explicitly and a large enough room for genuine, serious public investments, but as a sort of a counterpart, grants, in my view, much too much discretionary flexibility. Mr. Renzi was able to get 20 billion euros of flexibility out of Brussels, each time pretending it was a triumph for the country. Actually, it was a negative for the country because almost all of that was spent into current expenditure and transfers, so increasing the burden on future generations of Italians without giving as a counterpart any improvement in assets, any investments.
Okay, so let's stand back a bit and talk briefly about Italy's place in Europe, notwithstanding which political formation or coalition emerges from last Sunday's elections, Mario. So, you know, to remind our listeners, Italy, as an Italian national, runs the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, Italian President of the European Parliament, Antonio Tajani, senior member of the Commission and the High Representative for Foreign Security Policy, Federica Mogherini, Italian national. So at one level, you can say that Italy is well represented in institutions, but there's always isn't a feeling, isn't there, that Italy, despite being a founding father, either is not taken seriously by its EU partners when it comes to really heavy, serious policy-making, decision-making, or Italy itself does not take itself seriously. Would like to respond to that?
Yes. It is true that normally Italy weighs below its potential influence. I think this is due to a sort of late coming on the European files by the Italian administration and political system, by a mixture of an inferiority complex and of a complex of being treated unfairly by the others, even when it is definitely not the case, and above all by a lack of capacity to build alliances. But it is possible to do better, and Italian governments have on occasions done better. Let me remind just of two or three passages. It was many years ago under an Italian presidency that the difficult decision of the direct election of the European Parliament was taken. It was again under Italian presidency in 1985, the Milan European Council, that the process for the single act and the single market was launched. It was in Rome in 1990, again under Italian presidency, that the way has been paved to the Maastricht Treaty. And actually, Margaret Thatcher suffered a defeat there, leading shortly afterwards to her resignation. And closer to our days, if I may, in 2012, when Italy was in a critical financial situation.
You were Prime Minister.
I was Prime Minister. I worked a lot. I had many meetings with Chancellor Merkel, with President Hollande, I called a meeting in Rome with Merkel, Hollande and Rajoy just a few days before the decisive European Council of the end of June in Brussels, always keeping on board President Van Rompuy and President Barroso. And after quite a bit of arm twisting during a famous night in Brussels in the Euro Summit, at the same time that Italy was playing against Germany in the semi-finals of the European Cup, we persuaded Merkel to accept in a unanimous declaration the principle, which was heterodox, if not anathema, to German monetary tradition until that moment, that there could be stabilization effects for the government, stabilization interventions for the government bonds of countries in line with the EU recommendations. As is widely recognized, this was the political agreement which made it an almost no-risk initiative for President Draghi to say a few weeks later, we will do whatever it takes. And he was brilliant and forceful, but he would never could have done that, risking that 1 minute ago the German Chancellor or the Dutch Prime Minister could publicly attack him.
So to sum all that up, all those different examples, Mario, if I'm right, you're saying basically that Italy has played quite an influential role over the decades in the European project, as it is called, but maybe not always received proper recognition for that. Is that a fair comment?
I think in these cases it has received proper recognition in the cases I mentioned, but it is true that in other cases the Italians are right in saying that the EU reaction was disappointing. They would say so, we would say so in Italy, particularly on the management of immigrants in the EU. I think it's not the fault of the Commission there, but the tough reluctance of countries, especially from Central and Eastern Europe, to take even small shares of the refugees,
right,
has been very, very much resented in Italy. Italians also resent what they call the austerity policies. There, my judgment is different. Italy, as a country with a very high debt to GDP ratio, needs to be very disciplined in its budgetary policy, as it has been in recent years, with or without the EU. I reverse the complaint against the EU. I think the Commission, the Eurogroup, the ECOFIN have been too tolerant in their discretionary dispensing of indulgences through flexibility, but have been adamantly stubborn so far in not recognizing this role for public investments. I am rather confident that the new German coalition might be more open in this respect. And I see there a possible pact, because the north of Europe mistrusts the south for the circumvention of the pact through all these forms of flexibility.
Yeah.
And they're right. The south of Europe mistrusts Germany and the north because of the reluctance to give a proper role to what is needed for more growth, public investment. So this is the ideal situation. I rarely believe that there are win-win situations in politics, but this could well be one, with the Germans happy that the principle of the golden rule, which was in their constitution until a few years ago, would be recognized at the European level, but with a counterpart of getting rid of all those flexibilities, and the South making the sacrifice of no longer being able to play the flexibility card, but being able to channel resources, even in deficit, for the proper economic use that is public investment.
Okay, one final question, Mario. I cannot resist asking you something about Brexit. I would ask you, unless you want to comment on how the British government is handling it, the negotiations at the moment. But I would like to ask you about how you think the European Commission, Michel Barnier, EU27 as a whole, are conducting their side of the negotiations, particularly through the prism of the internal market, the single market. You were, as I said earlier at the introduction, you were obviously the European Commission of the internal market back in the day. So do you think that the rather disciplined and robust, maybe not to say maybe aggressive approach now of Michel Barnier and his team to defend this phrase, the integrity of the internal market, is the right way to go, or should they show some kind of flexibility down the line?
Flexibility, but not there, because I think it is now the duty of Michel Barnier and of the European Commission to preserve a British conservative legacy given by Margaret Thatcher and Lord Caulfield, the Commissioner for the Internal Market, to all of us in Europe. And it's really a paradox that a vote by the British people, totally legitimate, has, without much reflection, I believe, made the UK the only country in the former 28 which perhaps will not be able to benefit of this single market.
We have to leave it there. Mario Monti, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.